It's time to turn the spotlight on local, national, and international affairs, plus some goss and scandal. And here's the man that does that so well, Mitchell Dye.
Good morning, and we're down here at the Shelter Shed in Queenscliff today. It's a great day for our outside broadcast, and there's lots to get through this morning. But first of all, we'll be talking about federal politics, and I will say that we did have Sarah Henderson lined up to come onto the program today, federal member for Corangamite, but I am told that she's not able to comment at this time on the issues pertaining to her shares, so we decided to put that interview back till next week, where we will be able to ask a few questions about that situation. So actually on the program now is our very good friend, welcome back, Richard Miles, federal member for Corio.
Mitchell, how are you?
Very well indeed. Well, thanks for being with us once again. And there's a few issues on the table today, a bit of overlap with what we spoke about last week. I mean, first of all, on the NBN, you have a situation now where the Prime Minister came out yesterday and basically said the whole project was a mistake. Is there something to that? Was the project a bit overly ambitious?
Oh, I don't think that's the case. We need to have a really strong internet backbone for this country. I mean, this is the infrastructure of the 21st century, and fibre to the premises was always the underlying idea when we were conceiving of and putting in place the national broadband network. The moment that that was compromised by fibre to the node as an idea was the moment this thing turned into a real problem. And we've got to remember, this government's in its fifth year. Their favourite pastime is to blame the former Labor government. The former Labor government hasn't been governing since 2013. It's now 2017. Serious governments take responsibility for what they do. Serious governments are about governing and not blaming others. It might be one thing to blame the previous government when you're 2 months into the job. This is their fifth year. So if this is a debacle of a train wreck, which I think was his quote, the blame for that lies squarely at his door, and his door personally, because he was, for most of the time, since 2013, the responsible minister.
At the same time, though, aren't there problems with the fibre all the way to the premises model as well, given some of the figures that we've seen that have been published in the last couple of days? For example, saying that it was costing upwards of $80,000 just to connect one home in Tasmania.
Oh, I think, I think those figures are fanciful. And once you are talking about a rollout across the country and the efficiencies involved in doing that, I think it's a very different equation. But at the end of the day, what is being rolled out now is a second-rate product, which for a whole lot of people, once they receive it, is worse than what they've currently got. This makes no sense at all. It really makes no sense as Australia is trying to build infrastructure and prepare for this century. I mean, we have to be we have to climb the technological ladder as a country. I mean, we have to do that as a city, I might say, as well. If we're going to have jobs which sustain a place like Geelong into this century, into the future, you can't do that with a second-rate internet backbone. You just can't do it. And that's what this government is putting in place. I might say they're doing it really slowly. So a lot of the complaints I'm getting as a local member is the speed, or rather the lack of speed at which this is being rolled out. But I tell you what, I speak to a lot of my colleagues up here in Canberra who have parts of their constituencies where significant areas of the NBN have been rolled out, and the complaints only increase. Because what people are getting in a lot of instances is worse than what they already had.
Yeah, well, I do know that the complaints did go up over the last quarter, reading the report of the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman. So, you know, you're right to point out that there are a lot of problems with it, and the government has been overseeing it for the last 4 to 5 years. At the same time, though, does Labor take some of the responsibility, given that the deadlines did blow out a bit, the costs did blow out under you guys as well, maybe not as much as now?
Well, we would have had it rolled out faster than what the government has rolled it out. And what we've seen since this government's come into power is an extraordinary blowout in costs. Tony Windsor got this right back in 2010 when he was talking about the basis on which he was making his decision about which party to support at that point in time to form government. And he said in relation to the NBN, he made a couple of really salient points. For regional Australia, it's absolutely critical. It more than any other piece of infrastructure, bridges, if you like, the opportunity divide which exists between regional Australia and the cities. So for us in regional Australia, this is a critical piece of infrastructure. And then he said this, he said, do it once and do it right. And that ought to have been the principle by which we went about rolling out the national broadband network. And doing it right means fibre to the premises. Fibre to the node, backed up in many instances by old copper after that, in terms of the connection from the node to a person's house, is doing it wrong. It further entrenches inadequate infrastructure, which people are now going to have to live with going into this century. And as I say, they're ultimately rolling out a product which for many, many people will be worse than what they already had. It makes no sense at all.
And something else that's come out that's a bit of a blast from the past has been Kevin Rudd's memoirs. It's coming up to 10 years since your government was elected back in 2007. And it looks so far from the extracts I've seen from the book that have been published in The Australian that no one's been spared in Kevin Rudd's memoirs, whether it's John Howard or Wayne Swan. I mean, do you think that these sort of internal party machinations are best kept behind closed doors, particularly when some of the people mentioned are still in Parliament?
Look, I mean, ultimately, it's for people make their own choices about how they recall their time. I think there is value in hearing what giants of the past and whatever people think about Kevin Rudd. He's absolutely a giant. He was a Prime Minister of this country, and I think hearing his view of the events leading up to the night of his election in 2007, and this is the first volume of what I understand will be a two-volume set, and the first volume is his career leading up to his election as Prime Minister. I think, you know, hearing that is of interest. I mean, people will, as I think Kevin would expect them to, take with a grain of salt what his views are in respect of the individuals that he was with. I mean, it necessarily is only his perspective. You know, I think it's an interesting story. I haven't read it, but I certainly remember the year 2007. It was obviously a big year for me because it was the year in which I was first elected to the Parliament. You know, Kevin as a campaigner was unmatched during that year, and it was his election in October of 2007 was absolutely a moment of great excitement.
Now, on the energy debate, we spoke about this last week, and the government's maybe released just a fraction more detail about what their ambitions are, you know, to try and reduce power bills by something like 50 cents a day for the population, and then also meet our Paris Agreement. Are you sort of a bit clearer now as to what the government wants to do, or are we waiting on a lot more of that detail on how it's actually going to work?
Oh, I think I'm not clearer at all. And you talk to people, you know, the key stakeholders in this space, and they will say that this is 6 to 12 months away from being properly understood. Because at the end of the day, you have an 8-page sketch of come up, which has been, it would seem, arrived at very much at the 11th hour as a means of principally dealing with the internal divisions of the government's party room rather than solving the issues around energy policy for our country. This is, I was going to say, to the bare bones, it's barely that. And there's a lot which needs to be filled in. So it's really impossible to judge what is being sought to be done here by the government, whether this makes sense going forward. What we do know, though, is that, you know, the ambitions, for example, in relation to renewable energy, at 28% renewable energy by 2050 is a pathetic, really a pathetic ambition. I mean, you would almost have to slow down the rate of renewable energy take-up in order to hit that mark by the middle of the century. We will vastly exceed that even if people just go along as business as usual. And so right there, you've got to be a little sceptical about what's being put forward here because it doesn't even reflect where the situation is today. But at the end of the day, what this is about is fixing an internal party room issue for the government. What we need to see is proper, definite policy settings for industry stakeholders and particularly the private sector so that we can get investment going again back into our energy sector and we can see new energy coming online. Because unless we see new energy coming online to replace, if you like, the old power stations which have come to the end of their life, well, then we're going to have the situation which we've got now, which is less energy, a growing population, and therefore an increase in energy prices.
In terms of your policy, the 50% RET, I'm hearing figures being thrown around of $66 billion as the cost of that. Is that a figure that Labor accepts?
No, and that's a figure really pulled out of thin air by the government. Seen in relation to renewable energy is incredible steps forward in technology over the last few years, even here in Australia where the government has done little to encourage investment in renewable energy. But if you certainly look at the technology around the world, it's improving dramatically. And what we're talking about is the prediction of where the world will be at in 2050, 32 years from now, 33 years from now. So I think that the 50% renewables by then is eminently achievable. And if you look at the way in which we've seen progress in technology and increase in take-up of renewable energy, I think it's absolutely achievable, as well as a reduction in the cost of renewable energy as a source of energy. But we need to have ambition here, and we need to have ambition because at the end of the day we do need to reduce carbon emissions within our economy. I mean, it's the right that we need to do that in terms of the planet, to be sure. We need to do it in terms of making sure that we've got an economy which is keeping pace with the rest of the world, because this is where the rest of the world is going. And if we don't, we will find that as a heavily carbon dependent economy in the future, we are going to be penalised by the rest of the global system, and that is the inevitable consequence of where the world's going, the Paris Accord, and what needs to be done in terms of addressing climate change. So, yeah, we actually have to walk down this road, and what we've got with the government is a stubbornness in refusing to do that, and then along the way sending in deeply confusing signals to the private sector about how investment's going to work, and as a result there's an investment strike, and that's why power prices are going up.
On economic trends, the government's saying that unemployment is going down and job creation rates are rapidly increasing, and they're saying they're doing much better than when we were under Labor. Is that what you're seeing out there? Do you think that reflects the current state of the Australian economy?
I don't think there are many people in Geelong who would, for whom those figures would resonate. We have gone through significant economic shocks locally. When you think about Alcoa, when you think about Ford, there's been little done in terms of by this government in terms of trying to find other industrial or manufacturing alternatives for our country. There's little investment. Well, there's not the kind of investment, if you think about it locally, in Deakin University, for example, which is what you need to do if you want to climb the technological ladder and develop manufacturing industries for the future. This is a government without a plan when it comes to our economy, when it comes to manufacturing. And I think all of us in Geelong who have lived through the last four and a bit years absolutely know that what we've seen is as big a deindustrialisation that our country has experienced. And it is people in Geelong, cities like Geelong, which are paying the price of that.
And last of all, euthanasia. This bill is now before the upper house, and I think will be voted on in about the next 2 weeks or so in Victoria. But federal identities are also chiming in with their thoughts. We've had Paul Keating come out and say that he's against it. Sarah Henderson seems to be taking a strong stance against it. Do you have a view on this? I mean, I appreciate it's a very tough debate, and a lot of people and their views are shaped by their experiences and watching family members and so on and so forth. So it can be quite polarising, but at the same time, we do have to remember that there are people here that are at stake.
Yeah. Well, Mitchell, my instincts would be to support the legislation which is in front of the Victorian Parliament. Now, I say that with a number of caveats. I have gone through one conscience vote in the federal Parliament, and the principle I adopt there is that I would listen to everyone who came into my door to talk to me about marriage equality, which is what that conscience debate was about. And there's no doubt that my views evolved and matured through that process, particularly, for example, in relation to religious freedoms. I'm mindful that I haven't gone through that process in relation to the legislation before the Victorian Parliament. And I think you do need to go through that as an MP to really get a defined sense of where you land. And so, you know, I kind of put that caveat on the table. I haven't gone through the in-depth process that people like Chris Cousins, Lisa Neville, John Aaron have gone through. And I think I'd want to have the benefit of that before giving an absolutely concluded view about the legislation. But over, you know, over the, my instinct has been to support measures which bring about some dignity when it comes to the end of life, and I guess that's the sort of instinct that I would take into a debate of this kind.
Do you think that a conscience vote is a good mechanism to solve some of these very, very deeply personal issues and very polarising issues? I mean, yes, you've supported it for same-sex marriage and have said that you're against the idea of a postal survey or plebiscite. Do you think that the conscience vote is sort of the best way to solve issues like euthanasia?
I do, actually, and it is. It's partly because of the process that I described. I mean, you really have to go through a personal journey and search your own feelings and develop your own reasoning. At the end of the day, you will need to cast a vote and you will need to make a speech which explains why you've cast the vote that you have. That there's a huge discipline associated with that. And if you take it seriously, which MPs do, and you meet all those who come through your door with all the various points of views that they have and they will be making a whole lot of very important points. You know, inevitably there is a rigour in that process, and I think the reason why parliamentary democracy has worked over a very sustained period of time as a very stable form of government is precisely because of the kind of process that people are going through now, listening to constituents, listening to stakeholders, putting it together, and then articulating your views, and ultimately casting a vote. And so I think it is a good way to go about it. And I guess it's not an issue which innately divides which is the basis upon which the parties divide. I mean, this isn't about how the economy works. It's not about whether you have big or small government. It's not about rights at work. I mean, all those are the traditional bases upon which conservatives and progressives have different views about a whole lot of political issues. This is separate to that. And so I think having a conscience vote free of the parties discipline in relation to how you vote and going through that process, I think, is a really important thing to do, and I think ultimately it yields a good result. And having watched the way in which my state colleagues have been going through it, there's no doubt they've taken this very seriously, and it has been a very heart-wrenching and heart-filled debate.
Richard, thank you very much for your time this morning. We'll catch up again soon.
Look forward to it, Mitchell.
Thank you very much, Richard Miles, the Shadow Minister for Defence and also the Federal Member for Corio.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.